The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
But first, let's go to a woman who has had a very colourful career working with the likes of designer Donna Karan in New York, selling scarves in Saudi Arabia, and now heads up the Considered range for Dunn Stores. Helen James, thanks for joining us. Now, first, let's go back to the start. You grew up in Dublin in the grounds of the Chester Beatty Library, where your father, Dr. David James, was the Islamic curator. So a childhood on a very prestigious Shrewsbury Road, of all places. What was that like?
It was amazing, but it was also strangely isolating. I mean, we grew up on the grounds of the museum. It was down a very long driveway set back from the road. It was kind of an isolating as a child. I used to envy all my friends who lived around a green, you know, and all the kids in the evening would come out and play on the green and play kick the can. And I really envied that. But the other side of that was that it was an incredible experience aesthetically. And, you know, I think that really influenced me. I used to go into the museum and wander around as a little girl. And, you know, these all the incredible textiles and colours and beautiful little miniature snuff bottles, carved snuff bottles, you know, with little animals that were one of my favourite things when I was little. Some of them were carved out of peach stones, like the inside of a peach, you know. I just remember staring, like I was probably the same height, you know, my little face staring into these windows of all these tiny miniature carved animals and kind of inspiring your imagination, you know.
And you were there because your dad had worked in the library. Did that mean that you would have got sort of special access to go in there after hours or have a look at night in the dark or things that, you know, the ordinary visitor wouldn't get to see?
We didn't get to go into the museum at night, but we used to play, friends would come over and we used to play hide and go seek in the grounds at night time and around, and we used to like actually climb up onto the building and hide and play all around the grounds. So the grounds were kind of like our playground, do you know, after hours. But we didn't actually get to go into the museum after hours. But yeah, it certainly was unusual, was an unusual childhood.
Now, in 1991, something happened which was very dramatic for the family. Your dad, who had been a curator there, was arrested and charged with stealing a large number of very valuable manuscripts. What was that experience like for you? What age were you when it happened?
I was 21. And yeah, it was devastating. I mean, truly devastating for my entire family, emotionally, financially. It was like the world ended and began again, you know. I had been travelling for the summer and I came home, got off the plane and arrived at my house, and my brother's girlfriend answered the door in tears and said, "Your dad's in the Bridewell." And it was just like unbelievable. And I went there and my dad was there and with my mother and my brother. And yeah, it was just absolutely devastating for the entire family.
And in a situation like that, how does that conversation go? Because you were an adult, you were old enough to have a conversation with him that says, how did this happen? Or what were your emotions?
I was shocked, you know, I was just shocked. And he immediately, as soon as he was arrested, you know, fessed up to it and helped the police with, you know, recovering everything. It was a funny time because it was devastating, but also in a way it was strangely liberating, because I think, you know, I did grow up in this very privileged, you know, South County Dublin, and I found myself at 20, I was in the National College of Art. I found myself in sort of going down this path where I felt I didn't really belong, or I somehow was, things were being expected of me, or I was living somebody else's life. And when that happened, for me personally, it was kind of a watershed moment in terms of, actually, I don't owe anybody anything, and I can be whatever I want to be, and I can dress how I want, and I can do what I want, and I don't have to conform to some sort of, you know, idea of what a girl in South County Dublin is supposed to be.
So in a way, this had punctured part of the stability or the veneer or the expectations of the life that you had. And then I suppose when that gets punctured, in a way, everything is up for grabs. You can look at yourself differently.
Yeah, definitely. That's a nice way to put it. But yeah, punctured. That, yeah, just, you know, your whole world just collapses. So
how did other people react to you, for example? Friends,
my neighbors? Close friends were incredibly supportive. The wider circle of friends, like, in a way, actually, there was a bit of street cred around it for me at my age. You know, there was a real novelty about it. You know, at that, I suppose you're that young kind of impressionable age. And but I did find it, all of a sudden, I was in a very different place financially to all of my friends, because we just, like, we had nothing then. So that was difficult for me in coming to terms with. But for my mother, she felt the brunt of it much more in terms of society and how she was treated, and just like, it just was, she was persona non grata overnight, you know. So for her, it was really devastating.
And of course, because of the unusual or even exotic nature of your dad's work and his area of expertise, your folks probably would have found themselves as part of that sort of embassy belt or embassy circuit, and there would have been opportunities to travel abroad and do all of that. So all of a sudden, I presume that just
disappeared. Exactly. Yeah, they would have been very much part of that, you know, Dublin society and going out to parties in the embassies and around Shrewsbury and Aylesbury Road and all of that. Overnight, that ended, you know, for our whole family. And it was that case of, you really know who your friends are, you know. It was tough times.
And your dad went to prison for a time. Mm-hmm. Did you visit him there?
Yeah. So he was in Mountjoy, which was a strange experience. He was in Mountjoy for a time, and then he went to Shelton Abbey, the open prison down
in Wicklow.
In Wicklow, yeah. And then I went to New York. He was still in prison when I went to New York, and he used to write to me. He wrote me letters, and I kept them all, and I found them recently, and I still have. I haven't read them all, but I still have all those letters, which is a lovely memory, you know.
What was he saying in the letters? What was that sense or the tone of it?
Well, he was talking about his experience in there, not in great detail, but you know, I know that he greatly regretted it, but also when he was arrested, there was a sense of relief and release, you know, as there would be with having held that in for so long.
Were you angry with him?
Was I angry with him? Probably in later on, yes. Yeah, I just was like, how could you be so stupid, you know? But also forgave him, you know. He was human. I know that he greatly, greatly regretted it, you know.
And what about your mom then? Was she an influence in terms of her personality on your career and career choices?
Absolutely,
as well?
Yeah. I mean, she has incredible taste. After we left Shrewsbury Road, we moved to Ranelagh. It was beautifully decorated, but my mother was a skip diver and used to, you know, stop the car and jump out and be rummaging around in skips, and I'd be hiding in the back seat, absolutely mortified, and would buy the furniture in charity shops and secondhand shops when that was really not cool and that was really frowned upon. But she had this incredible eye and still does this, you know. She'll go to the dump, bring something and come back with
more than
a table or and then be reconditioning it, you know, back. And she was doing that back when that wasn't cool or fashionable.
Has it rubbed off on you? Are you?
Yeah.
A bit of a
now
skip
my
rummager?
Children are the same, doing the same thing, hiding in the back of the car as I rummage around in skips, and you know.
What
say,
are you looking for? What do you hope? What was your best find?
You never know what you might find. Actually, New York was fantastic. New York was a fantastic place because in New York, when people would get rid of furniture, they just leave stuff out on the street. So I found amazing stuff like leather boots, prams, chest of drawers. you know, all kinds of stuff.
You studied in NCD then, design beckoned, and after NCAD, you went to New York.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did that come about? Why New York?
There wasn't much call for textile designers here in Ireland. So I was working in Lily's Bordello and just partying, clubbing, you know.
Lots of celebs going in there at that time, I'd imagine.
Yeah, yeah. It was quite the scene there. There was all, you know, Bono and Sinead O'Connor and Def Leppard, and it was all that gang in there. There was, yeah, it was fun. But in terms of career, there wasn't much happening. So I applied. I had my boyfriend at the time's dad said to me, you should apply for a Donnelly or Morrison or whatever they were called at that time. And I did. I had no intention of going to America. I had no interest in America. And then a year later, a thing came through the letterbox. You've got your visa. And I had a great friend, Simon Watson, who's an amazing photographer. And he had gone to New York. So I thought, well, Simon, can I come and sleep on your floor for a couple of weeks? And I went to New York, literally went to New York with €500 in my dollars in my pocket, and slept on his floor. And he had a friend who had an interior design business, and she hired me, like, literally, I think the week I got there. I got an apartment down in Tribeca, which was not cool at the time. It was very much, you know, down and dirty.
Downtown.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not uptown.
No. Very downtown. And but the apartment was actually, if you remember the band Manhattan Transfer.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was their old studio, and it was owned by their old manager. And so there was a little studio inside, a soundproof studio in the middle of the apartment. And I shared it with this Scottish guy and the stepdaughter of the manager of Manhattan Transfer, who used to rollerblade around the apartment in her underwear. And it was just this amazing. I just was like, this is it.
This is
the New York dreams, you know, of like this incredible story. And when you were coming home at that time in Tribeca, the steps up to the apartment building were metal, and you used to have to clang, clang, clang on the steps because there was rats everywhere outside. So, and rats the size of cats, you know. So, it was the New York story.
It's full of Wall Street bankers and private yes. equity billionaires now.
Yeah, yeah.
I won't draw any analogies. That would be unfair. But you'd want to have a lot of money to live in Tribeca now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think my rent at the time was $300 a month.
That would be the cleaning bill now.
It would, yeah. The grocery bill for one day.
So you decided then to go back to Ireland, and in coming back to Ireland, how long had you been in New York?
So stayed in New York 10 years.
10 years.
10 years, yeah, yeah. So I ended up, after the interior design, then I ended up working for a weaving company, a cotton company, who were one of the last companies in America where they grew the cotton. So they owned the mill down in the south. They grew the cotton and wove it and then sold it. So selling to people like Levi's and Oshkosh and those kind of making denim. And and I think about 3 or 4 years after I left, they closed. They just went, and all that business went to China. And then I went to work in Donna Karan. Freelanced then for years for them. And then, yes, in so we were there for September 11th. And that was really a turning point. I think once I became a mother, there was definitely this pull for me back to Ireland. And then once September 11th happened, I thought, this is going to change America. And that's not where I want to raise my children. So
you came back and decided to go the opposite of Manhattan, Castle Pollard, from Tribeca to Westmeath.
Yeah, I wanted to grow vegetables and live in a field and have outdoor space. So we bought an old farmhouse in Castle Pollard, saw it on the internet, which was a real novelty at that point. That was the talk of the town. All my friends were saying, Helen bought a house. She saw it on the internet. Isn't that hilarious? So we bought an old farmhouse, and there was a big garage out the back, which I converted into a studio.
And of course, after 9/11, 2001, the Irish economy was picking up. People were spending more money. You were back in Ireland. You were designing your own stuff. The Obi Belt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was very popular.
Yeah, that was something I made, and it was like a very simple sash belt with leather at the front, cotton on the back, and then two long silk ties. And I made it and sold it in costume in Castlemarket in Dublin. And then around the world, that belt paid my mortgage.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I literally got in my car, put samples in the back of the car and drove around Ireland and sometimes cold call, you know, with a suitcase and just...
Cold calling and driving around selling it sounds, it's tough going.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you put it together, it sounds like such an idyllic life. You know, you're in rural Ireland, you've got your kids are growing up, plenty of space around them. You're getting the mortgage paid by this wonderful product that you've come up with and you're selling all around the world. But you decided to go back to America.
Yeah. I mean, what happened then was 2008 and the crash. And so that just decimated my business. A lot of the boutiques that I was selling to closed down or returned stock. And I was pregnant with my third child. So that was going into 2009, and I just decided to take a step back and kind of hold for a moment. And I remember one day standing in my house and looking at my bookshelf, and it was all cooking and homewares. And I thought, what am I doing in fashion? I don't belong here. I need to find some other way. I need to find a way out. And at that point, my marriage was starting to break down, and we had met in New York. And I think part of it was, let's go back to New York and maybe that will make everything okay. So I had a friend who was going back to New York to set up her design studio in New York. And so I rang her up and I said, I'm going to come over for 2 weeks and stay with you and just go see some headhunters, have a look around, see if there's anything out there. And about a week later, she got a call from Donna Karan to do a freelance job for the homewares department. And so she rang me back and said, I've got this freelance job. I can't do it. I'm too busy setting up the studio. I also don't want to hire somebody that I don't know and trust. You're coming over for 2 weeks. Why don't you extend it? Come over for a month. I'll hire you to do this freelance job. And the first meeting with Donna Karan team, they said, we're looking for somebody full time for this role. And I just said to myself, I'm going to get that job. They're going to give me that job. And I just started acting as if they were going to give me that job. And I went looking for apartments. I found where the good schools were in Brooklyn, came back for 3 weeks, packed up the house, and we went back. But I just was like, they're going to give me that job. And they did.
Did you settle well? Did the kids settle well?
No.
How did it go?
No. The kids didn't settle at all. They absolutely hated it. I remember Lewin, who was 9, said to me after we were there for about 3 weeks, Mum, my feet really hurt, but I think it's just because I'm not used to wearing shoes every day. And I thought, oh, I have taken them from this bucolic idyll, you know, in the middle of Ireland where they're, I mean, they literally, their childhood was like running around barefoot out making forts and streams. And they still talk about that. And they're both very creative. And I brought them to Brooklyn where we had no outdoor space. You know, even when you go outside, it's come here, hold my hand, what are you doing? Go over there. Everything is organized and there isn't that freedom that they had, you know, that incredible freedom. I was working, I was leaving the house at 7 in the morning. I was getting home 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. You know, the rat race. And I really saw New York in a different light when I went back. The capitalist sort of survival of the fittest and the no regard. Even small things started to really annoy me. Like there was no news for the deaf. There was no wheelchair access for the subways. Like those kind of fundamental things, which all of a sudden I think as an adult, well, you don't really notice those when you're in your 20s and you're partying the whole time. But, you know, as an adult, I thought this is not actually where I want to live as an adult, and this is not where I want to grow old. I just, yeah, it had changed and I had changed. So I just, we made the decision, but it was really difficult because coming back to Ireland in 2010, there was nothing. You know, my business was gone, but I was like, it'll work out. It'll work out. Something will happen.
You came back and you worked with Avoca, and then the opportunity to work with Dunnes came along. How did that happen?
Mrs. Heffernan was having a conversation with Tracy Tucker, who owns costumes, mother in the store, and saying, and Carolyn Donnelly had gone in and was doing homewares, and she had been made creative director of ladies' wear. And Mrs. Heffernan was saying, I really need somebody to help with homewares. I need somebody to come in with homewares. And so Tracy's mum said, well, there is this girl, Helen James, and she was working for Donna Karan in New York, and now she's back and she's working with Avoca, but I think she might be open to, you know, having a conversation with you. And so they said, oh, yes, 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 come in. So I got a phone call from Anne Heffernan, and I went into Dunn's and met with Anne and Mrs. Heffernan. And then in the first meeting, Mrs. Heffernan said to me, would you be interested in doing your own brand as well? And I said, absolutely. But I won't do both of those things at the same time. So give me a year to come in and set up a design team for homewares. And then after that, I'll come back to you with an idea for the brand and what I want to do. So that gave me a year to go into Dunn's and get to know the culture, get to know the suppliers, and really think about what I wanted to do and where I wanted the brand to go and what I wanted it to be.
Well, it's interesting because even going back to when you came back from America the first time, you had set up on your own, you were mm-hmm. doing your own thing. You obviously have that instinct or desire to run your own business. So mm-hmm. even, you know, you're doing your own thing within Dunn's. Yeah. Where do you think that came from? Was that always there?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I just, I think money is a great motivator as well, you know, in terms of like just having to provide for the family. And but I think it's more than that. I think even if I didn't have to make a living, I would still be doing something. Like, it just is something that's in me.
So what kind of implications then has COVID-19 had for you and for what you're doing?
Everybody's at home and I make stuff that you put in your home. So we have really been busy. Part of it is people are going in and doing their grocery shopping and they're walking by my range as they're doing that. So it's like, oh, I'm just going to pick up a few cushions. I'm just going to pick up a few candles, you know, throw them in the trolley while I'm doing the supermarket shop. So in terms of working, obviously there has been challenges because design is so much more than visual. I got a cup in yesterday and it looked beautiful and we saw it and they sent it. And then when I held it in my hand, the handle just doesn't feel right. You know, it's too wide. And you can't tell that from a photograph. You can't tell that the cup doesn't feel right in your hand.
Are you a bit of a perfectionist?
I wouldn't consider myself a perfectionist, but I like things to be a certain way.
Yeah, I get the picture. I get the picture.
And it's my way. So no, but I have an amazing team in Dunn's and I am not a dictator. And I actually really relish that. I love having a team. And I really missed that when I had my own business. I found it very isolating. You know, I need other people around me to bounce ideas off.
And do you find yourself, from a creative and a design point of view, always looking around, always thinking about things, always thinking about, oh, maybe Christmas next year, maybe next summer that?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely, constantly. It could be even, you know, watching a detective show on the television and somebody might walk into the room and you'd say, oh, I love the colour of her top and her trousers, and I'd be taking a photograph of it, saving it on my phone, you know, going for a walk in the park, the trees, the colours. You know, I think that for creative people, constantly, your eye, you're constantly looking, you're constantly gathering information.
Do you ever go into the Chester Beatty Library now for inspiration or to look over some of those things that you remember?
I don't, actually. I was there since it moved to the new, and I work right beside it. And I went in once and it just felt really strange. And I walked up to the turnstile and the person said, welcome, do you know the collection? And I just looked at him and I said, yes, I do. And I walked in and it just felt really, really strange. But I actually think it is something that I should do and will do. I'm going to do that. Yeah, go back and have a look.
Well, Helen James, designer, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.